Welcome to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. It is that time of year. This, I think, might be the last episode we record of the year, Dave. Or not of the year, well, but...
Yeah, not of the year, but...
Pre-Christmas, for sure.
Yeah, because next Sunday will be something else.
I might do a rerun.
Yeah, well, I think we're both gone.
Yeah, I got the holiday
The holiday coming up, and then New Year, and...
These midweek ones always screw me up, too.
Right? I mean, those are brutal when the holiday's on a Wednesday.
Yep. Yeah. Midweek, and you know nothing's... It's like, I still come into work, but there's just nothing going on.
Right.
So, this might be the last episode for the season. I like doing this every year. We will do a year in review today. It always seems to fly by, and it's like I get to this point, and I'm like, holy smokes, man, that was a whirlwind. Do you want to go in chronological order?
Sure, that'd probably be a good way of doing it. So, like,
we applied for a bunch of stuff. Neither of us got the moose tag.
Right.
Much to your chagrin.
Yes, even though I keep saying this is the year, but, you know, someone's got to get it. But we applied for a bunch of stuff across the, you know, Nevada and other states, and then...
I was less lucky than you.
Yes. Well, in what context? I had the tag.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We won't fast forward through it, but when tags came out, I felt less lucky than you.
Yeah.
I had a mule deer tag in the rubies.
We both did, yeah. That was that party tag.
And then I had a cow elk tag. You had a bull elk tag.
Correct.
Yeah. God, we were in that party and then elected to just... The reality of applying for a bunch of archery tags is that you are going to have to get good at cutting some of them.
Yes.
It's just, there's no way. I know both you and I have a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
And I think we were looking at dates and I realized, well, holy smokes, if I keep this mule deer tag, I'm going to hunt basically August 1 through September 10th nonstop.
Yeah.
And I could not swing that. So I elected to keep my cow elk tag. You elected to keep your bull elk tag.
Correct. That which is probably a smart move. You don't want to get rid of those.
I don't think anybody would.
Getting rid of the elk tag bull elk to keep a mule deer, but
mule deer was those. Rubies.
Yeah, so. And it was that, you know, we can get that next year, but yeah, so that's how somewhat of our year started. That's like first quarter of the year. I mean, the beginning of the year was fishing out at Pyramid, and last year was not as productive as things are going on this year.
Have you been out again?
I have.
And it's been good?
It's been good.
Oh,
granted,
okay.
My fly fishing is, I would classify it yet as fly fishing.
Okay.
It's more of just kind of like a really bad dance with string.
You look like a drunken wizard casting spells?
Correct.
Perfect.
Yeah, I look like Harry Potter, like his first year at Hogwarts or something.
Swinging around a stick.
Just throwing it around. But, you know, I caught a few. The cool thing was is the folks around me were just
doing good,
doing really well, and some just absolutely gorgeous, brilliant colored fish. And we're all on ladders.
Okay.
So that's definitely been better than last year. Last year was for it to be so warm so far this year, like warm.
In a t-shirt this morning.
Yeah. And then bird hunting last year was
We had a good end to the season there. So that would be this year, January-ish.
Yeah.
We had a good end to the season. I'm trying to think about any archery highlights before we get into hunts. Shot Redding. Let's see. I don't think either of us hit our goals at Redding.
No, I did not.
Hey.
I did not.
Did I tell you that this will be the first time I air this? And I got to ask you about this. I don't know what I took third place in.
In Redding?
In Redding. I got mailed a plaque that is on my wall at home, third place Western Trail Classic, with my name on it. And it was mailed to my home address.
Huh.
Would that have been like that?
Were you in Bowhunter? You shot Bowhunter,
I shot
right?
my hunting setup.
Yeah, so you shot maybe you took third in Bowhunter, which that would be pretty awesome.
The proof is on the wall. I thought it maybe was one of that first day where we do the pay shoot thing.
The shoot with the pro thing, the
blind
draw. The blind draw.
Okay.
No, that's just money. Like, you win, you and get an envelope of cash. Yeah, and we, oh, no, we weren't anywhere near.
No.
Yeah, they drew me with somebody who shot, like, wretchedly.
Okay. So
but that happens.
I am a winner or a third place winner
of
something.
At Reading.
At Reading. Nice. For the Western Trail Classic.
Yeah.
I got that. And of course I got it and was like, I'm not going to say anything. I don't, this something weird is
That's
going
weird
on.
They
here.
Didn't put like your division or anything. Is usually.
Oh, there's something on the back. I got to tell you what, because you're coming over to the house for a Christmas party.
Yeah.
We'll take a look at it. But yeah, it got mailed to my house and months after the shoot. And Cynthia was like, I was like, oh, I'm going to, whatever, I'll throw this in a drawer or whatnot.
Yeah.
And of course, Cynthia was like, oh no, you did good. She like nailed it, put it up
on the wall.
And I'm like, I still don't know exactly what the heck I got it for.
Right.
So there you go.
Yeah, last year was a good year for 3D.
Yeah, you did well. You made some money last year.
Yeah, I did. I made some decent money last year, and then I got my belt buckle from Winnemucca for the indoor 3D. I finally got my first place belt buckle, which thank you, Tina and Winnemucca Archers. Yeah. That belt buckle is super sweet.
Well, we're going to be out there again, what, February 7th and 8th?
7th and 8th for the 450, indoor 450. Right? So, and I'll be bringing my new Tri-Tech, Darton Tri-Tech 35.
Back on Darton.
Yeah. It's been, as long as the limbs stick together.
Fingers but, crossed.
Yeah, that thing is just, I have been tinkering.
Well,
I am just in heaven.
That's what that bow is. I mean, what can you not adjust on it?
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. So I set it up the first time and I did like a dual back bars and threw some other crazy stuff on there. Shot, did okay. Then I ripped it all apart and rebuilt it again because I was like, this is too much fun. Like changing draw lengths and turning the bus cape. It was it was too much fun.
What's the old know thyself? So we went up and shot bows and I wound up going the opposite direction where I said, I want to get it tuned. I don't want anything that moves. I don't want anything that slides. I'm tired of breaking stuff. So,
you have that issue.
Yes, I do. Yeah. So I shot that Darton and I was like, holy smokes, this is a phenomenal bow.
Yeah, it's so smooth.
The problem for me was I was like, oh, wait, I can adjust this, then I can adjust this, then I can adjust this. And I saw it, and I had like one of those slideshow time-lapse things go through my head, and I was like, I'm going to break this, I'm going to break this, I'm going to break this. So I wound up with a new hunting bow, a Hoyt.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't want any adjustability.
Yeah, because you got the new RX. Yeah, because they really haven't, Hoyt hasn't really jumped into that like super versatile micro tuning as like Bowtech and Darton and PSE have done, but
they did this year. They have that.
Well, they
tuning.
Have that new.
So
tuning
I got
on
the last year's RX9.
Yeah, and the only difference between the RX9 and the 10 is your front adjustment on your limbs, which Darton has that.
Right.
Yeah, which is super cool. It's nice to tinker with it. But yeah, when I was farting around with my bow and undoing these set screws and putting them back in, I tell you, I must have thought of you every time I was putting one of those back in going, okay, do not Henry tighten this to where you pop the head off.
Yeah. I literally did. As soon as I got that Elite target bow back from you and I started setting it up, I was at the shop with Tim and Chandler. Within 5 minutes, we had it tuned, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to move this a little bit, and I broke them on.
Yeah, you just need to remember, it's not a bolt on a frame of a truck. You don't need to torque it down that far.
That's why I went the opposite direction. So, gosh, that was archery stuff. You did great. It was a good, productive archery season. We both drew tags. Now, let me look at the clock real quick. I'll tell you what, Dave, let's save the hunts for next segment. Thank you to Shooting Performance Institute for sponsoring the show. And do not go anywhere. It is the 2025 Year in Review episode only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you miss a segment of the show, you can always go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, and all the episodes are available there. And for Apple users, you can also search for Nevada Backcountry on the Apple Podcasts app. Over the break there, Dave and I got talking, and I started going down a rabbit hole, and I said, wait. We'll save it. We'll talk about it now. We'll start with August 1, my cow tag opened.
Yeah.
I think the first struggle right off the bat was bulls. It was a bull show.
Yes.
We had
that first day.
Yeah.
That first day was bulls were everywhere. We didn't even see a cow.
No, opening morning, what did we see? Like 14 bulls?
Yeah, it was something like that, and we didn't even see a cow.
Nope. And it was spikes and bulls.
Yeah. And then we had those folks came in.
Yeah. Went into the spot that we had originally planned on going into. Had a little bit of that crowding, I guess. It wasn't that. It's not like there are people around every corner, but there were certainly people going past camp every morning.
Yeah.
Which, hey, it's public land.
That's the beauty of it. It's public land. A lot of land out there.
Yep. And we tried to do the respectful thing. In fact, I gave you kudos at the time. I'll give you kudos again. You were the first to speak up that day where I had scouted earlier in the year and I wanted to get into this bowl where I'd seen so many elk. And we got there and there was a side-by-side parked. And I'm glad that you spoke up. Dave was the first one to say, this isn't a good idea. Let's let them have it. Let's go somewhere else. Because I did start thinking like, well, if we cut up this ridge, I was kind of like, man, I want to get back into the spot I had watched elk during the summer.
Right.
You were the ethical voice of reason and said, no, let's go somewhere else. Let them have it. Now, what I really wanted to talk about, and I wanted to pick your brain. You've got more experience than I do. I don't know when the charge in mentality stops. So I don't want to toot my own horn too much, but I can usually stalk within bow range. Now, where I get hucklebucked still to this day, and this is what happened on that cow hunt, if they're in like a patch of timber or a patch of green or something, I find them, I watch them for like a couple minutes, and I'm like, okay, they're in here, they're milling about, whatever. Like, I'm going on a stalk. I want to get there before they leave, and I know it's going to take me some time to cover that ground. Where I got hucklebucked last year on deer and this year on elk is, I think, not watching long enough to figure out how they're going to and fro out of that cover.
Right.
So like this year, I got to like 70 yards, actually drew on a cow, and she kind of stepped in to the brush, and I had like guts and ass. That was my shot. I wasn't willing to take that shot.
Right.
So I let down. But where I cost myself an additional opportunity is I was on the wrong section of that patch of green. So when they left out of it, I had no shot whatsoever. And I don't know if that's an experience thing. I don't know if it's, I think it's not watching the animal long enough. And I did the same thing last year. I was at an angle on a really good bedded deer, and he chose to go the one direction out of that cover that I did not have a shot. So it happens to me still to this day.
Yeah, well, and it still happens to me. You pick the wrong line.
Dang it.
No, it's so.
You're supposed to drop some knowledge on me,
well,
Dave.
Well, I will. So, yeah, one thing would be to not just watch the animal, especially with elk, because they're a herd species.
Right.
You know, primarily when we're talking cow elk. So you want to watch the herd.
Right.
Not just the animal. You want to watch the herds and put a little bit more time in it to see what they're doing, how they're acting, which ones are pushing which ones, and what they may or may not do over a period of time. Are they going to go down? Are they going to go up? Are they going to come right at you? You know, so give it some more time. And if you feel that you are for sure 100% in the wrong spot, back out.
Yeah.
Because they are herd animals. They will most likely, if you don't spook them or freak them out, there's a high probability they'll still be there later.
Yes.
So you back out and you try to reposition yourself from the knowledge you've gathered, like, okay, I'm going to take a 70% chance that they're going to be moving down this canyon. So
right.
I'm going to back out of here. I'm going to drop off this ridge, get underneath them, catch eyes on them again, and see what happens. So rushing in sometimes in those situations, especially in a thick area, you don't know how many cows might be in there.
Right.
You don't know if you already got two or three that are staring you down.
Yeah.
And as we all know, when they bust out of those zones, man, it's like a train.
Yeah. Pandemonium.
They're all gone.
Yeah. So,
and then with the deer, I mean, those are just, man, I can't even count how many times I've done that where I've gotten out
You're
of deer.
Ready.
I'm like, okay, all he's got to do is stand. And I've had times where they've stood up and immediately turned.
Yep.
And all I've got is a butt shot or a head-on shot at 75 yards. And you're like, yeah, that's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
And
yeah.
Then, you know, then they, you know, do what the one thing you're like, okay, as long as it doesn't do this. And it's almost like you're putting that out in the atmosphere.
You thought it
like,
into
you're
existence.
Thinking it right into existence. And they're like, you're like, really? They could have gone five different spots, but they go the one spot.
I don't have a shot. What I learned on that elk hunt, because how many times we found the elk and it was like, okay, we got to get over to here so right. I can make, and then they would just poof, vanish. So I had a little bit of that going on in the back of my head. Like, hey, I've got these cows milling about in this thick stuff. I'm going to make a play now. Okay, I'm watching maybe a couple minutes. Okay, they're just feeding. All right, dump my pack. Hey, my brother and Armando.
Right.
Afterwards, getting up there and having them leave that stuff in the one direction I didn't have a shot when they left, I realized there was a super well-worn game trail, and they followed it right out of that thing. I could not see it from the direction I stalked.
Oh,
but
okay.
When I went back to the rocks, like 800 yards away where I went on my final stalk, I realized if I had taken my time, I could see part of it from those rocks.
Oh, so you just didn't glass long enough to take in enough information.
I was so glued to those elk that I didn't look like 200 yards below them and see that game trail going. And now who knows if it's an entrance or an exit game trail.
Yeah.
But if
it's well used, then you know, well, I got a better possibility of focusing on that than just random open dirt or sagebrush.
Right. Or so, crawling through crap like I did.
Yeah, and that's a tough one because that's, you know, when you are bow hunting, you do want to get on something, you know, relatively quick in a sense most bow hunters do, to have that willpower to say, okay, I'm just going to sit here for a bit.
Yeah.
You know I've got a 400-yard stalk to go to just even get within 100
yards
of them, 70 yards.
Yeah.
But yeah, to take that time to kind of like glass all around the animals, like how did they come in here? Like if you're just spotting them for the first time and they're in some thick cover, like one of the things I always put in my head is like, how did they get to that spot? Where did they come in from? Where did they go from? There's a nice saddle off to the left here. They may have come in from there, from down below. So I always try to go backwards. Like
that's a good call.
I try to go backwards. Like, well, how do they get in there? And then how are they going to leave if they do leave?
Right.
You know? And then I'll make my decision on how I'm going to approach them. There's times where I'm like, I have no approach.
Well, yeah. And the wind plays a factor.
Exactly.
And everything.
So
sunlight.
So I'll mark them and I'll back out and then I'll go find something else. But like wind's usually a big one.
Yes.
Like if it's like my only entry into these guys is going to blow my stinky butt right to them.
Yeah.
So
I think we were on day 3 or 4 of the hunt at that point. So I knew I
was
pretty ripe.
There was a lot of stinky going on. So yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, you know, you've got plenty of experience in doing it.
I still screw it up.
Well, shit, dude, we all do. I mean, how many times are you just kind of like cruising along? Oh, I want to walk up to this saddle and glass. So you just start like beelining for the saddle and then you start walking up there and you look to your left or right and you're like, oh, hell.
We're right there.
There's a deer right there.
Yeah.
And they got you in a laser beam look.
Yep.
And you're like, well.
Oh, they always spot you before you spot them.
Oh, man. You're like, well, I shouldn't have, just focused on charging 800 yards to a saddle.
Yep.
So, yeah, I still do that. I get anxious.
It's funny, too, because I got all those things for glassing, and I'm real meticulous and good about glassing and how I pick stuff apart. But like I said, I mean, this last season, I did it to myself. I got so, you know, I always talk about that 40,000-foot overview.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't take the time. I was just like, elk, they're right here. They're feeding. Okay. What's the wind doing? What's it? Okay, I planned my little stalk based on that, but I just did not take the time to go, okay, let me zoom out a little bit and what is around this thick patch of timber? I would have seen that game trail and at least who knows what would have happened. I would have at least given myself an additional opportunity.
Right.
If I had seen that and gone, oh, heck, that's like a highway. I bet they're using that. Let me kind of tailor this last 100 yards to where I could cover that and keep the wind in my face.
Right.
And it is what it is. Hey, we learn something every year. Coming up next, we'll get into your elk hunt a little bit, Dave. I know we did a couple episodes on that, but we'll do a quick little review on that. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, segment three of Nevada Backcountry on this pre-Christmas Sunday. I hope everybody has got a family gathered round, a Christmas tree loaded with presents underneath.
A new rifle, a new muzzleloader, a new bow waiting for you
to
unwrap and smell.
And smell give it the sniff test.
Yeah.
There were some big developments in commission meeting stuff this year, and I know you submitted a proposal to get rid of the let-off requirement.
Yeah, the archery let-off.
The contrived.
Completely eliminate it. So that's going to be coming up here in 26, get on the agenda to discuss that. So I'm just hunting out, reach out to the archery community and hunters in general, as well as the clubs, the archery clubs, to get some letters of support.
Good.
Because those always help out. But to eliminate that 80% let off, because it's, for one, it's not
stupid.
Yeah. Most states have eliminated it completely. I think we were talking, Idaho's the only one that still has one.
As far as I'm aware, yeah.
Yeah, and they moved it up to like 85%.
Which, why?
I'm sure eventually they're going to pull it completely as well. Following the footsteps of all the other Western states around us that don't even have it in their regs. You just, for one, I don't think it's even being enforced.
No. There's one game warden that I've heard, and this is rumor mill stuff, but I've heard there's one game warden down south that actually checks.
Yeah.
And I don't know who it is or whatever, but I've heard that rumor before. But otherwise, and we've talked on the show too, it's like, I guarantee, and no offense to our listeners, I always, I think you were probably the tippy top of educated, knowledgeable archers and hunters. But in general, I think archers out there have no idea what their let off is.
Oh, no.
They buy a bow, they get it tuned, they do whatever. If you put a gun to their head, they're not going to be able to tell you what
and
their actual
is. A lot of the new bows coming out now are coming out at
90%. At 90, yeah.
At 90, and they can be adjusted down. And plenty of bows out there now, you can adjust the let off with an Allen set.
Yes.
I mean, you just turn the knob and the little gear moves and you can adjust it. So, you know, so that's another issue there. Anyway, some other big things in the commission this last year was the Wine Cup Gambles Ranch.
Yeah, the land
acquisition and the land transfer stuff. That's still going on. So everybody out there, be aware of that. Keep yourselves.
Make
your voices heard on that, because that land transfer that would eliminate access to thousands of acres of prime mule deer and elk hunting land.
Yep.
It would be eliminated. There would be no access. They've already made it pretty clear that their access will be cut off if that becomes their land.
And don't let them forked tongue politispeak their way into convincing you that you're getting something in return, because as we talked about on the show, what the public is going to get in return if that transfer happens is essentially overgrazed, barren land that does not hold elk, does not hold game.
No.
What we would be giving up is absolute prime, pristine elk habitat with a huge chunk of the elk herd in it.
Correct.
So don't buy the, oh, well, you're actually getting this in return. Man, I'm not giving away sirloin for a pile of another S word.
Right. Exactly.
Not doing it.
So, you know, so over this next year, just we'll be definitely bringing it up on the show.
Yes.
For sure. Some other big things going on, some of the topics that will be continually discussed here for the next couple months is going to be emerging technology and hunting.
Oh, that was a hot button topic.
Yeah, it's still a hot button topic, and there's some things getting added to it.
Okay.
So that's just going to keep rolling pretty good. There are some deals with primitive weapons and youth hunters, potentially eliminating the primitive weapons section out of the youth because of lack of participation.
Ooh.
So that would be a really detriment. I mean, I think it needs to be more education and training towards teaching primitive weapons to the youth and to folks that are interested in doing it, instead of just kind of throwing stuff out there and hoping people grab it, you know. So there's some components there. There's,
I'm going to say something real quick.
Yeah.
And I might get in some hot water. This is only me. The Nevada Department of Wildlife has the worst marketing outreach program. I'm not going to that I've ever come across. So anyway, that's my two cents, Davis. man, it blows my mind every year. I've offered to have them on the show. I've done this, that, or the other thing. And whoever's doing the marketing winds up buying ads on like a hot AC station that zero of hunters listen to in the market. And I'm like, there you go. That was your community outreach. And you can't figure out why people don't know about this. Perfect. All right, there. Gripe over with. Sorry. There's my constructive criticism for the Nevada Department of Wildlife. And I would point out on that note with the primitive thing, we're not talking primitive like in Montana or Idaho.
No.
Youth can hunt with a compound bow and a sight and all that. So it's not like stick and string stuff.
No. We're not talking like flint, you know, flintlock.
Exactly.
We're talking inline muzzleloader.
Right.
Is considered primitive.
Primitive in Nevada.
Any archery is considered primitive. And then another big one that's coming up and is definitely going to be a great conversation is the crossbows.
Okay.
The potential of eliminating crossbows completely out of archery.
Right.
So if you end up having to have the permit because of a shoulder injury or what have you, and that's going to be, that's going to have some pretty strict guidelines in order to acquire that permit yearly. Okay. And so then you would only be able to hunt with a crossbow during the any legal weapon hunt. Removing it completely out of archery, which most Western states don't classify a crossbow as archery. It's
correct.
Considered any legal weapon. So that's the direction that the commission is moving towards because of this advanced technology now with these crossbows being able to reach out at the same distance as a muzzleloader. They're shooting animals at 150,
115, 120.
Yeah, there's some, you know, you get some of the new Raven 570 is shooting 150 yards and shooting darts. I mean,
probably better groups than most muzzleloaders at 150. Well,
I was fortunate enough. I got to shoot one of those when I was in New York.
Yeah.
I went to an archery shop. And, you know, crossbows are pretty popular in that part of the country. And this guy had the coolest archery range, the facility. It was just awesome. The back of his property was a static range going out to, you know, 200 yards. And then he had his own 3D course that you could pay a couple bucks and walk a 20-target 3D course on the property.
Dude.
I was like, this is sick. Anyway,
Nevada.
I got to shoot one of those Raven 570s. And
okay.
I've never really shot a crossbow, never really had any interest in it. But I'll tell you, man, at 80 yards, I was stacking arrows in there, these 5-inch circles, and I was just dropping them in there. Granted, it had a scope, just accuracy. And it's a 23-inch arrow. They call them bolts.
Bolts, yeah.
So,
I mean,
it's almost a full-length arrow.
Right.
And it's throwing those things at 580, 590 feet per second. Just
unreal.
Ripping.
Unreal.
So that's one of the reasons it's becoming unfair in a sense. You know,
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
So that's another one coming up here real soon.
Okay.
They've already been a presentation on it, some pretty in-depth conversation on it. And now the commission has asked the department to go a little deeper or a lot deeper into the details of what that regulation, the language of that regulation would be. And then
that's stuff that came up this year.
Yes.
That will be voted on this coming year.
Yeah, will be
right?
addressed in 26. So, and like we said, Henry and I will keep everybody posted to what's going on in the commission, some of the really important things. We still have issues with potentially the sell off of land or transfer of land for renewable energy stuff. So, but we'll keep that one.
Top. We'll keep it top of mind. We'll cover it on the show. One thing we didn't get into, and I'm looking at the clock here. I'll tell you what, I'll rip through this real quick. All the sheep stuff going on in Southern.
Yes.
That was a big hot button topic this year. And I will tell you, Mark and Matt Jackson, our CPAs here at Evans Broadcast, okay. Their older brother got his desert bighorn just, gosh, a couple weeks ago or something. But they said it is slim pickings down there.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly what unit they were in. It was one of those Southern Nevada hunts. But I foresee that being a continuing hot button topic unless Old Man Winter decides to show up at some point here.
That would be nice if Old Man Winter did show up. But yeah, there is some issues with some of the herds going on across all the sheep. We got some issues going on in the Pancake Range with a certain type of bacteria infection that's going on because you got domestic sheep cruising around in that area. So there's a lot of moving pieces here and a lot of management decisions trying to be made to best address this and promote our wild sheep population, because we're the only one in the country that has three sheep.
Yeah.
We're the only state. So
yeah. That's it. Yeah.
That's it. I mean, good luck getting a Rocky though.
No kidding. I hear the music. We have got to go to break. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry, sponsored by Battleborn Tree Service, coming up in a minute. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this pre-Christmas show. I love and hate this time of year. It's the whirlwind of business stuff at work. Then it's the whirlwind of, okay, where did I hide this child's present?
Oh, God, yeah.
For any of you listening that are below a certain age, is my chimney accessible to Santa Claus? That kind of stuff goes on at my house too this year. But sincere thank you for spending another year with me and Dave on the show. Last segment here, let's get into something exciting. You started putting the gears in motion this year, Dave, and I know we breezed over your elk hunt, but hey, we did two shows on that.
Yeah, so that's right.
We're everybody good. That listens
knows. I don't need to be reminded.
So, range to ridge is, do I dare call it a business venture, Dave?
Yeah, it is. It's a business venture. It's a Range to Ridge LLC.
Okay.
So, but
you got something exciting coming.
I do. And if you follow it on Instagram at Range to Ridge, then that's not two is spelt out. The two is it's actually the number.
Range numerical
to Ridge.
Two.
Numerical two. Range to Ridge.
Okay.
So it's going to be basically we're going to be doing some archery training and coaching for beginners, intermediate, and advanced shooters. Depending on if you want to be competitive or just do 3D or just hunting. And then we're going to be looking into in the spring, do an entire bow hunting series, how to properly glass, how to read the animals. We'll be working with long distance shooting, a little bit longer. Like we're talking from 50 to say 80 yard shots. And we're going to be talking about placement. We'll be dealing with processing an animal in the field, processing an animal at home. So we're going to be getting into that later on when we start getting some good weather and stuff.
Very cool for
the bow hunt. A lot of the cool stuff that we're looking at doing eventually is going to be bringing a few new shoots in the area.
Oh, archery shoot in the Reno area.
Yeah, in the Reno area, hopefully with collaboration with some of the clubs or organizations. And we've been talking with a few organizations that are interested in being a helper in it or a co-host in a sense.
Okay.
But we're looking at doing some ASA.
Yeah.
Some of the ASA shoots where those are incredibly popular Midwest through the East Coast, bringing some of that in and then doing some Olympic shooting. So not Olympic recurve, unless you want to use Olympic recurve, but some team shooting, which has been, people have talked about it for years. It'd be so cool if there was like team shooting. So we're looking at doing some of that.
I think the ASA thing would be awesome because I know some of our friends back east that are religious about shooting ASA stuff.
Oh my!
They can knock out a course in like a couple hours.
Yeah, it's only the ASA shoots are only 20 targets and they don't exceed 50 yards.
Right. And they.
But it's very, there's no marks on the animal.
Right.
There's the little 10, the larger circles are 10, the smaller circles are 12s, and then they got a 14 that you have to call that's like way off on the backside of the animal. So if you miss the 14, you end up with like a 5.
Yeah.
So it's brutal.
I was going to say too, the thing, Timmy was telling me this, is like you'll walk 20 feet to the next stake to shoot.
Yeah.
Versus like the trail shoots we have out west here where you may hike, you know, 600-700 yards to the next stake to shoot, depending on the course layout.
Right.
So
right.
They'll just go and they'll rip through those. It sounds super fun. I'd love to do one.
Yeah, they're super cool. Then they have other ones where they're like indoor, where you just, the animals are laid out in a field.
Okay.
And then they're all labeled. And then you just move from your square to the number. They'll have like six squares that you stand in and shoot from.
Okay.
And you'll just rotate through the six squares.
Oh, very cool.
So number one will shoot a lion. Number two will shoot the cougar. Number three will shoot a white-tailed deer. Number four will shoot. So, and you just kind of cruise along it. So then people can sit in the stands and watch. It's like how they do a lot of the shoot downs. But another thing that we're looking to bring in is backcountry first aid training.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
That would be a good one. So that is another one I think is going to get a lot of attention because it's an important thing, man. What do you do in the backcountry in when something happens, man?
Wilderness medicine stuff.
Yeah, wilderness medicine stuff. So, you know, just really trying to bring more folks into hunting in general, enjoying the outdoors and, you know, doing it ethically, being safe about it and just kind of building up the community, the archery community and the hunting community in general. So
with this range to ridge thing, if you get those ASA shoots and stuff going, if you can do them in town, that would be phenomenal because, hey, look, I'm a member family. My whole family are members at Silver Arrow Bowman.
Yeah.
We go down, we shoot the Carson City course and stuff. But I got to be real with you. Out there driving out to Lemon Valley, especially with the construction, it is, I got to leave work early. It's an hour plus out there.
To get there. In that construction, it's brutal. Yeah.
Same thing with Carson. If you don't time it right, man, you get stuck in that traffic going down there. And so I always thought that was, anyway, I'm beating around the bush, but I want to applaud you for trying to do something like that in town. Cause I would love to have an option for, like, you and I live at the south end of town, you know, something for Reno that I don't feel like I got to drive an hour just to shoot a 3D course. That would be awesome.
Yeah, and again, it's all in the works, you know, and the beauty is that Range to Ridge is partnering with Hunting House.
Yeah.
So that's where the classes are going to be, the beginning classes. There's going to be group classes or private lessons if you choose the private lessons. It's going to be a great time.
I mean, right
it's
over all there off
be,
Longley.
Yeah, it's all going to be USA Archery NTS format, which is pretty much the standard across. And I'm fortunate enough to be a level 3 NTS coach through USA Archery.
No, you're not fortunate. You worked for it.
Well, dude. I worked pretty hard for it. So I've got that. So you're not being taught by just
me.
Yeah. So there's a lot of cool things going on. There's a lot of things that are on the let's think about it plan as well, moving forward as this builds.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that will be driven by a lot of the community, what they may want, how they may want to see things, and just, you know, the hunger for it. So
if people have questions, what's the email address?
range2ridgeoutdoors@gmail.com.
Okay, range2ridgeoutdoors@gmail.com.
Yep, or message us on Facebook, Range to Ridge on Facebook, or at
Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram at Range to Ridge.
Yeah, super cool. And I know, I don't feel like I'm giving away anything, but I know you've been talking about doing something like this for a long time. And you started kind of an archery thing back in the day and that got absorbed into everything else going on.
Right.
So I'm excited to see where you go with this. And I know we're looking forward to it, Dave. So yeah, this is going to be a cool year for us.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. And again, it's partnering up with Hunting House, which is over on 4690 Longley Lane in Suite 20. So you can even contact them as well in relation to this. There's flyers down there at the shop as well as just contacting us online.
Perfect.
But it's going to be cool. I'm really looking forward to it. The classes are already starting to fill up. And then we're going to be doing leagues as well. Saturday and some Sunday and Monday leagues.
Way cool.
So that'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be a good time. So come and join us.
After that last segment and bad-mouthing the marketing outreach from Endow, this is not going to be an Endow bashing show. However, because I do think, honestly, in my heart of hearts, I think Endow does a phenomenal job with managing the wildlife. Do they get it right 100% of the time? No. But as far as state-run agencies having lived and hunted in other states, I think Endow does a pretty dang good job. However, So you know what they say, everything before the butt is. But they don't really do a solid how to bow hunt or have a solid how to bow hunt program. And by that, I mean, not just the shooting thing, but like, here's how you read a map. Here's how you use a compass. Here's how you plan a stalk. Here's what you look for. Here's, hey, instead of using this powder, you know, there's this thing called milkweed. You can float that and use that to read the wind.
Yeah.
Like a comprehensive hunting program for those that want to not just bow hunt, but backcountry bow hunt. Hey,
yeah.
Here's what you got to do with water. Here's how you do it. Here's how you could strategically plan your hunt based on water source, yada, yada, yada. So I think there's a need in the market. How many people have we had on the show this year that have said, hey, I want to get into hunting. How do I go about it?
Yeah, we've had a lot, and there's been a lot of chatter on several pages that I'm a part of that ask about that.
Yes.
One of the things that we'll be doing in that bow hunter series is like, how to be prepared, preparedness.
Yeah.
What are you taking in the field? What's the use of that item? How do you carry it with you every day? What's in your kill kit?
Yeah.
All of that kind of stuff as an archer, and not only just an archer, but even primitive weapons. We'll be talking about muzzle loaders, proper loads. Cause you know, we did that whole thing on that. So that'll be brought back in.
How do you pack a pack so you don't F up your back 2 days into the hunt? Where do heavy items go? Where does this go? Yeah. What do you access the most? You know, that kind of stuff.
And just like what's in your pack to overload it to, which I've done before. Yeah. And then you end up harvesting an animal a mile and a half in and you're like, oh, okay.
Maybe I didn't need that camp stool in there.
Right. You know, that kind of stuff. Like, do you really need this stuff? Because if you do harvest something, how are you getting that animal back off the mountain in August?
Styles of packs that are conducive to that sort of thing.
Yeah. Can you handle 100 pounds, 125 pounds? And we'll be getting into like training things before you get to the hunt, like some things you can start doing to kind of get yourself conditioned and ready for the hunt. So I'm really excited about it. It's going to be a cool venture. I've got folks that want to really help out. So, and I want to make it a real community effort and a community outreach deal where, you know, kind of like reading the room. What do they need?
Like I said, man, that's just one of those vacuums in the space. I always thought, man, if they could just do this, what looks like. As in most cases, private enterprise is going to step up and fill the vacuum left by government. I think this will be awesome, Dave. I'm looking forward to that. That is going to do it for us. Everybody have a Merry Christmas. And shoot, Dave and I, maybe we'll do one after Christmas. But in all likelihood, we will see you in 2026.